Then we should get the study session in order, and we'll be hearing a presentation on the Commission of Sexual and Domestic Violence.
Okay. All right. Good evening. My name is Susan Marks. I'm the director of the Bellingham-Whatcom County Commission on Sexual and Domestic Violence. And most years, I come and speak to the council about our work and what is happening with domestic violence throughout the county and in this community.
Could you please point that microphone towards
closer
yourself?
To me?
That would be great. Thanks.
Okay. My child with me today. So the DV Commission, we started in 1998, and the city of Bellingham and Whatcom County formed the commission together. And in 2006, all of the other municipalities in Whatcom County signed on to ordinances of support. So our role really is to provide support throughout the county and resources throughout the county. Our role, we're really at that 30,000 foot level. So we are doing systems level work. So we are looking at how are we serving survivors, offenders, and their children in this county, and how can we support agencies that are interacting with those people to make help them provide the best possible support services and interventions. So we're kind of connecting institutions, stakeholders, and communities. We want to increase understanding and effectiveness of our community response, transforming systems responses, so we're using best practices, and fostering safety, justice, and well-being in our communities. And I will provide a few examples of some projects we're doing that relates to that work. We're probably on the third slide. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so our commission, we have up to 31 people on the commission. I believe the full roster is in your packets. And the idea is that they're all leaders in the community who have the ability to influence the way that their organizations, their agencies, their institutions are responding to domestic violence and sexual assault. So nonprofits, healthcare, public schools, colleges and universities, faith communities and human services, representatives from the Lummi and Nooksack tribes. We have a therapist and a researcher. Police chiefs, including Chief Tanksley, serves on the commission to represent all of the small cities' police chiefs.
Is the county sheriff on there as well?
County sheriff is on there as well. Mm-hmm. And the Bellingham police chief is the other chief. Court and probation administrators, the county attorney, the county public defender, and the Bellingham city attorney. And then from the state level, we have Department of Children and Youth. Our Children, Youth, and Families, they've changed their names like three times in the past 10 years. Department of Children, Youth, and Families, which is basically Child Protection, and DSHS, which is Cash and Food Assistance Office. And then other elected officials, we always have one mayor from all of the small cities serve. Currently, it's Mayor Hansen from Ferndale, who is serving on the commission. We are funded primarily by the City of Bellingham and Whatcom County. Since they founded us, their commitment is to provide us with the majority of our general operating support. The City of Ferndale has a grant program, which we currently have. Most years, we have funding from the City of Ferndale. And one of the things we're actually working on is continuing to stabilize our funding, like a lot of organizations. The COVID years were a challenge, and so we're kind of getting back to our pre-COVID levels of funding. We've often had a lot of federal funding from the U.S. Department of Justice, so that's some of the stuff that we are putting together projects to pursue again in the future, which really allows us to have a much bigger impact on the county when we're bringing in. The Department of Justice grants are quite large, so they're really helpful. So I want to talk a little about some of the projects from our work plan, and our full work plan is in your packets, but that'll just give you a sense of what we're doing and also what is happening related to domestic violence and sexual assault in this community. So one of the projects we're working on is piloting restorative and transformative justice responses to sexual assault and domestic violence. So what we're doing is looking at where are communities or systems or subcultures who are ready to implement this new process. And so it could be like some colleges and universities. Whatcom Community College and Western Washington University have experienced interest. Some faith communities expressed interest. Arts and music communities expressed some interest. So looking at seeing who we're going to partner with. The other organizations that are working with us on this project are the Whatcom Dispute Resolution Center, the Makeshift Project, Western Washington University, Lummi Behavioral Health, the City of Bellingham, and the Shakedown. That's actually, it's the next slide, I think, talks about this. And one of the things we did was this last summer and fall, we gathered input from survivors of domestic violence throughout the county and asked them really about what were their experiences, and we also asked them what they thought about restorative justice, because what we really want is, I think a lot of people hear restorative justice and they think it's really offender-centered, which it can be, but we're looking at a survivor-centered response that puts the person who experienced the harm at the center of the process and provides them what they need, which might be direct interaction with an offender, It might be interaction with a system that they reported to. It might be interaction with a friend they talked to who didn't provide the support that they wanted. It might be just working with two different parties to develop some sort of safety plan. So this is really about thinking about additional ways of healing and justice for the survivor, which may or may not impact offender behavior moving forward. But our goal, again, is to support the healing process and safety process for the survivor. So when we talk to survivors, one of the things we heard, next slide, please. One of the things we heard is that a lot of survivors want this option. It's an additional justice option. Not all domestic violence is illegal. So there's a lot of domestic violence you cannot report. Financial abuse, emotional abuse are things that are not actually illegal. So most of what actually happens in a domestic violence relationship cannot be solved through the criminal legal system. Also, some people report, and one thing, reporting does not always lead to a prosecution, so sometimes people are looking again for other options for justice. So a lot of survivors want a different option and are also trying this on their own. So these are some of the things people told us when we asked them. There was some kind of larger process, a larger container around it with support people in place, then yes, absolutely. I wish community could have come together more to talk about it and acknowledge what was happening with him and even brainstorm how to keep ourselves safe, how to keep people in the community safe, and how to hold him accountable. And I wrote him a letter and did have someone send it. I really felt like I needed him to know what the impact of what he did was. I haven't really cared ever if he gets punished, but I want him to know the impact that it had on me. We also did hear a lot of caveats and trepidation. And we also heard a lot about what the survivor, the harm that happens when survivors go to other people for help, when they ask for help from systems, when they ask for help from their family and friends, people who are really well-meaning and don't always know how to respond in a way that's helpful and supportive in the way that survivor needs. So really that input helped us think about what our next steps are. So the next slide is, so some of the recommendations we have from the themes of what we heard from these, we heard from about 42 different survivors. Was one, both this program needs intensive planning, preparation, support, and also each case will need intensive planning, preparation, support. There's gonna be no kind of cookie cutter response. And so we're not looking at where we'll have 500 survivors come through a door in a year. We're looking at a program that might serve 5 survivors in a year, but have a really deep impact on them. Survivors want autonomy and choice. They want to choose which kind of support they look for and what kind of support they get as they go through a process. Safety planning will always be key, both physical and emotional. Almost everyone who'd experienced domestic violence still has some level of fear about the person who harmed them and how they could continue to harm them. That we'll need to continue to connect people with community and tribal-based advocates. And we need to think about the harm caused by secondary survivors, which are family and friends and systems. So one of the things we've thought of is, a lot of times they don't want to talk to the person who like directly hurt them, their offender, but they may want to talk to a prosecutor who didn't charge their case and have a, you know, conversation with that prosecutor about what that meant to them and why that decision was made, which can really cause some like real understanding and healing and take away that sense of being invalidated. Or they might want to talk to their brother who they told, and the brother says, you know, I know that guy, I don't think he could have done it. So these are some of the stories that we heard that are things that we'll be thinking about, other ways to repair the harm. One of the things we know is when people, it's their first disclosure and the response to their first disclosure about sexual and domestic violence has a huge impact on how they heal. And so thinking about who was their first disclosure to, and that's also a way to provide restorative justice. So another one of our projects is working with survivor defendants. This is means people who are a part of the criminal legal system because they are the victim of domestic violence in the relationship, but they have committed some sort of crime. This often, I mean, it's always related to their victimization. So it could be something like defending themselves. It also could be retaliating using violence, or it could be getting caught up in something like driving a getaway car, possessing drugs, selling stolen goods, things that stem from their relationship as a victim to someone else. Next slide is, so when we started doing this work, we talked to people who are in the system, law enforcement, prosecutors, defense attorneys, about what is it like for when you work with what's called a survivor defendant or a victim defendant. And some of the things they said is, it's not just a couple of nights in jail and you're fine. There's so many other court dates, repercussions, requirements, court-mandated things they have to do. They're just running around continually treated like a criminal. The victim-defendant issue is a big, huge problem. I'm not saying the numbers are huge, but anytime it happens, it can be devastating. And I've seen over the years people who are left with a feeling of no other way out of a relationship. The system won't help them, advocates won't help them, the cops won't help them, the lawyers won't help them. So again, those are people who work in the system with survivor defendants and things that they have seen about the challenges. So we put together in 2019 a report on survivor defendants and are kind of getting into the implementation phase of the recommendations. The next slide talks about the themes from that report. So one is arresting and charging survivors causes long-term and complex harm. Include having a criminal record, being engaged in the legal system for a long time, can impact housing, employment, volunteering at your child's school, child protection and custody cases. The other is misconceptions about how victims look and behave can impact who is arrested and charged with domestic violence. So people experience marginalization in society are most at risk for being survivor defendants, particularly same survivors who have the same sex as their partner. There's high dual arrest rates, which can have an impact on survivor defendants. And then context matters, and this is actually the key to why our system has this kind of issue, is that our system tends to be incident specific. So we show up to an incident, and if one person has committed the physical violence in that incident, generally it's a mandated arrest, and that person could be the victim of the relationship, but they have used the violence in that incident, right? So, and domestic violence is a very context specific crime in which it's the whole nature of the relationship. So it's not even, this is an issue where we're not even saying, oh, everyone is, you know, people are showing up and messing up. It's that our system is set up in a way that sometimes just creates people who are, they are committing crimes, but they're doing it in a very specific context to how they're being abused and treated. So some of our recommendations for supporting survivor defendants that we'll be working on this year is developing tools and training for community-based advocates like DVSAS, LMI Victims of Crime, and the Nooksack Tribe so that they can do better safety planning and support for survivor defendants. We're going to look at one case that involved a survivor defendant. So something that the prosecutor's office is providing us with a case where we can look at that case deeply and figure out what were the strengths and where can we improve intervention and prevention. Providing training for community partners. I know the Blaine Police Department is going to do a training, I believe, in September on identifying survivor defendants and how to support them as possible. And then working on expert witnesses for defense in survivor defendant cases, so helping defense attorneys know, here are the people you can call who can provide a clear picture of who is the victim and the defendant in the case. We want to get it right. So, and then the final thing I just want to talk about is just our very existence, some of the things that we provide for people is just doing the subject matter expertise. So as I said, people go a lot of places for help, and people who work in systems, agencies, nonprofit organizations don't always know how to help a survivor who comes forward and discloses. And so we are available for people sometimes call us, or we have a lot of resources that we can share with people, toolkits and resource guides about here are questions you can ask if you want to screen for domestic violence, here's how you respond, here's how you refer people. And so a lot of these housing providers, workplaces, schools, courts, media, faith communities, and healthcare providers all kind of fit into that category of people that sometimes we proactively reach out if something's happening, and sometimes they proactively reach out to us. So, and then finally, I just want to make sure people know, I think you got an invitation, but we are having our annual meeting Thursday, May 25th, so in a couple of weeks. This is actually our first in-person meeting, hopefully transitioning to primarily in-person meetings again in several years. We're going to be talking about procedural justice, which is really about when people go through the system, what is more important to them often than the outcome of their case is how they perceive their response. So are they experiencing dignity and respect? Do they feel like they have a voice? Do they feel like the system is trustworthy? And is there transparency in their encounters with the people in the systems? And so we're going to be talking about that and how, giving some examples of how that is currently working in Whatcom County. So we're actually going to use as an example the domestic violence specialist who serves all the small cities. The city of Blaine funds that position, and now having that person serve victims in the municipal courts in Whatcom County is an example of our communities committing to procedural justice so that she helps provide victims a voice and make sure that they experience dignity and respect through the system. Just read an article about the Blaine court, which was really exciting. We were like, my coworker and I read that, we're like, that's procedural justice, is trying to make the court system more accessible. So we might have some opportunities to talk about that. And then we'll also be thinking about where other places where we can do, implement more systems or ways of interacting with survivors that help them experience these things, even if not every case is going to be prosecuted, not everyone's going to jail, but how do we make sure that they come out of the system feeling like, okay, this was a just process, I feel better that I went through, and I would go back if I needed to, because that's our goal. So if anyone has any questions or comments, I'm open to those. Or Chief Tanksay, I don't know if you want to add anything.
I just,
as a commission member, but also I know that's a lot of what your department does is respond to domestic violence. So
I just had a quick question. I know during COVID, obviously, domestic violence rates increased. Have we seen the numbers come down, or is it still a little early?
Yes, I think we are seeing, so the incidents of domestic violence have come back down to pre-COVID numbers, but what we have seen change is the amount of time per person is people need more time with their advocates and are taking up more time, you know, if they're looking for housing or kind of all their needs are greater, and that increased during COVID and has not decreased yet. So that is, while the numbers have gone back, the amount of time people are spending on each case is just a lot greater right now.
Yeah, so I just wanted to add that, this is me, not only when you talk about domestic violence, that we also have to take a look at violence in the workplace, mm-hmm. violence in schools, violence in faith-based organizations as well. So when we take a look at the sexual and domestic violence, it's all inclusive of all these different areas. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Greatly related. Yeah.
Any other council members have anything they want to check on with our presentation? Was that your entire presentation?
That's my entire presentation.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for that update and that information.
Great. Yeah, thank you for having me.
Great. We have a regularly scheduled city council meeting starting at 6, and we can't start it early because that's when we told everyone it would start. So we're going to be in recess until around 6.